Welcome to the Songs and Stories of Canada. This program is called The Songs of the Land. Hey, John, you ever been caught outside in a big blizzard?
Well, I had to wait 40 minutes once for a bus in a big snowstorm.
No. I mean a real blizzard, a long way from home.
Nope, can't say I have.
Well, I got trapped in a blizzard once, for 3 days. I was out on a winter fishing trip up in northern Alberta.
Isn't that pretty dangerous? I mean, people freeze to death every year.
Yeah, but we were lucky. We found this old trapper's cabin to stay in. I was with my Uncle Klaus and his friend Stan. We really only wanted to camp there by the lake for the weekend, but on the second day, just around supper time, the sky started getting really dark and a fine snow started to fall. So Stan, he says, "Oh boy, looks like we're in for a blizzard." And he was right. So we moved into this little cabin right by the lake, just as the wind started to blow really hard. There were so many cracks between the logs in this cabin that the snow was blowing right inside. So while Klaus was making a fire, Stan and I were stuffing all the cracks with magazines that we saw lying around. I was just finishing stuffing all the cracks right around the window when Stan, he found some old writing paper in one of the magazines.
Hey, Rika, look what I found.
What is it, Stan?
I'm not sure. Could be some old letters. Bring the lantern over here.
Okay, here you are.
Whoever the old trapper was who lived here, he must have done some writing.
It looks like some poems, eh?
It does, yeah.
Stan had been a trapper too, so he was really curious about these poems that the old trapper had written. One of the poems was about trapping out in BC. After dinner, Stan, he kept reading it over and over and humming to himself. Pretty soon, he'd figured out a tune to go along with the words of this poem.
There's a twisting trail a-winding to my trap line in the mountains where the silky-pelted marten loved to play. There's a bitter north wind blowing, but I'm packed up so I'm going to those lonely mountain valleys far away. I hear the red gods calling from where the cricks are brawling and their voices stir me to the very core. And I cannot crush the longing for that little old log cabin where the virgin forest grows beside my door. When the bear comes out of hiding, down the trail I'll come a-striding till I reach the icy waters of the lake. And you'll know that I'm a-coming when you hear my outboard humming as it leaves a trail of bubbles in its wake. So I'll see you in the springtime when the ice goes down the river and the noisy geese are winging o'er the bay. To those secret trysting places in those wide and open spaces up the muddy Duncan River far away.
Boy, it sure is blowing up a blizzard out there. You can't see your hand in front of your face. You ever seen weather like this, Uncle Klaus?
Oh, yeah. Used to get like this on my farm out in Saskatchewan. You know those poems you found, Stan? Well, I bet if you found a bunch of poems written by a homesteader, most of them would be about how hard the weather was. We used to get blizzards and cyclones and dry spells that killed off our crops and our livestock.
Yeah, but it wasn't always that bad, was it? Didn't you sometimes have a good year?
Oh, sure. Sometimes I'd have a bumper crop. But I never knew I'd get it until the last minute. Even when everything looked perfect, along comes a hailstorm and wipes it all out. Then you got a big mess rotting out in the fields, and a bunch of debts at the bank. On a bad piece of land, it's even worse. My first homestead was nothing but a pile of rocks. No good soil at all. All I ever harvested there was thistles.
Was out in Alberta, long time ago. I started a homestead, a free grant, you know. I turned the sod over and started to batch, and I counted my chickens before they were hatched. When winter came in with 5 feet of snow, while chopping up firewood, I froze my big toe, and I lived upon syrup and flapjacks until I got a pain in my stomach which made me feel ill. 5 miles from water, 60 from town, the grasshoppers came and ate my crop down. The lake has gone dry and the grass is all dead, and I'm rustling thistles on my old homestead. I killed the last badger quite early last fall. The gophers have fled, now I've no meat at all. While putting out poison, I killed the neighbor's cow, but I rustled the money to pay him somehow. Well, the lake has gone dry and the soil's blown away. I'm rustling thistles by night and by day. The government tells me that if I don't pay my taxes, they'll take my old homestead away. 'Twas out in Alberta a long time ago. I settled a homestead, a free grant, you know. I turned the sod over and I started to batch, but I counted my chickens before they were hatched.
By the next morning, that blizzard was really howling. But you know, the more it snowed and the more the wind blew, the warmer we got, because the snow was piling up all alongside of the cabin, and the snow acted like a blanket, keeping us nice and warm inside. Uncle Klaus and Stan, they settled in for a nice long argument, with me as the referee. Klaus was saying that you just can't beat the weather, and Stan was arguing that all you have to do is learn enough to get along.
I was always learning something new when I was trapping. The first trap line I ever had was up in the Yukon. If you think this is cold, you ought to try up there. If you run into some trouble out there, you better have a fire, or you'll lose some fingers or toes. What you got to do up there, and an old-timer showed me this, is you take your axe out on the trap line with you, then every mile or so along the line, you pick out a good spruce tree and give it a chop down through the bark. Then you give that same tree a chop every time you go by it. The pitch oozes out through the cuts, and after a year or two, the whole bottom of the trunk is thick with dried pitch. Then if you twist your knee or break an ankle or something stupid like that, you can always crawl to the nearest one of these trees and set the thing on fire so you don't freeze to death. See, all that pitch makes it real easy to start up.
Yeah, that's a good trick to know. But what if you get into a tough spot and you don't have the right trick up your sleeves? Then what, hmm?
Well, you gotta use your head. Most of it is common sense. Like the time I broke the runner off my sled. I was hoisting the sled up a gully. When the dog started fighting, I lost my balance and the sled slid off onto a rock and smashed the runner. Well, you can't haul furs without a sled, so I had to fix it. Back at the cabin, I got a piece of wood about the right size and carved it down into the shape of a runner. But then I had to make some holes in it so I could bolt it onto the sled. What am I going to make the holes with? I didn't have a drill or anything like that. Finally, I got a bright idea. I took the metal rod that I used for cleaning my rifle and heated the end of it in a fire. Then I pressed the red-hot end into the wood and burned a little bit of a hole. I heated it up again, burned a little bit deeper. It was pretty slow, but it does the job. I was right in the middle of burning the first hole when I heard somebody outside the cabin. I went to the door. It was an Indian, not one I knew. He was carrying a rifle and some supplies, so I said hello and waved him over to the stove where there was some coffee. He wasn't real talkative, so I went back to work burning the holes. He must have been watching me for almost an hour. When I finally finished the first hole, I was feeling pretty pleased. And then I felt this tap on my shoulder. I looked around, and this guy's standing right behind me with a big smile on his face. He shoved me back away from the sled, took up his rifle, and with three careful shots, blam, 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 drilled the rest of those holes as nice as you please in about 10 seconds. Then he says, "Thanks for the coffee," and he left. So if you're willing to learn, you can always find some way to survive in the North. You don't have to look it up in books. All you gotta do is ask around. That's what everyone does. Everyone who's come to the North has learned from the Inuit and the Indians ever since the time of the first explorers.
Henry Hudson explored the Arctic Sea, all in the ship Discovery. While sailing south on the coast of a great bay, 'twas there his crew conspired of mutiny. Cast off the ropes and drift thee well, old man, you and your faithful seven. No more you lead our fortunes astray. We are returning straight to England. Henry Hudson looked to the coast and to his ship receding. No word spoke Henry to his loyal crew, but held his son who now was weeping. Upon the shore no welcome received. The land was rough and rocky. Upon the moss they found a fire pit, which showed a land that was not empty. Gather firewood from the shrub and find a place for shelter, for where there's faith to live, we will not die. Although our dreams, they may be shattered. Henry Hudson explored the Arctic Sea, all in the ship Discovery. While sailing south on the coast of a great bay, 'twas there his crew conspired of mutiny.
I suppose you must have seen a lot of animals in the bush. Caribou, bears, wolves.
Oh, sure. I remember seeing one wolf. I'll never forget. I was in the bush, just about to come out onto the shore of a lake, when I saw this movement out there, so I froze and watched. There was a young wolf sitting out on the ice of the lake, just sitting there, looking up, and right up above him, there was this raven that was circling around. Oh, 20 feet up above his head, and the wolf's watching him. This raven goes into a power dive right down on the wolf, and the wolf snaps real fast, but he didn't catch him. The raven landed about a dozen feet in front of the wolf, and he just starts walking around, sort of nonchalant-like. And I could see that the wolf was getting ready to pounce. He's all crouched down and wound up. Then he makes this terrific spring toward the raven, but the raven's too quick for him. Up he flies. Pretty soon he starts circling around again, And then he dive bombs the wolf just the same way he did before. This happened again and again. I was busting a gut, laughing so hard and trying to keep quiet at the same time. Tears running down my cheeks. I remember that, because that was my last year in the bush. After that, I went to live in town.
It must have been pretty hard getting used to town after being away for that long, eh?
Well, it wasn't so hard for me, because I'd only been trapping for about 8 years. But some of the old-timers who'd been out 30 years or more had a lot of trouble. I remember one old fella, Al Svensson. He was 79 years old when he moved into town. The worst time for him was the fall. He'd go down by the lake and watch the wild geese. It was real quiet down there. Not a sound except the honking of the geese flying south.
On Pakasqua River, so early one morning, while mending my tump line, I hear the geese calling. Over the brule, long clamoring cry, flying formation against the gray sky. Come the wild goose, wild goose, high over the north shore, and I'm going home. The river is open, but the lake's frozen over. It's time to pack out when so late in October. Winter is coming, the wild goose knows. We've had a long fall, and it's time to go. With the wild goose, wild goose, high over the North Shore, and I'm going home. I've made lots of money, got money to burn, and when I have spent it, I know I'll return. After the freeze-up, when snow is dry, for to work in the tall woods, where I wish that I was a wild goose, wild goose, high over the North Shore, and I'm going home. I've worked in the bush, spent money in town. I'd like to get married, but I can't settle down. At the last portage, when I pack no more, let me fly with the wild goose high over North Shore. With the wild goose, high over the North Shore, and I'm going home.
The one time I worked up north, it was in Ontario up by James Bay on the Little Abitibi River. I was up there with a survey crew. We were trying to figure out how to divert the river so the government could build a dam. So there we were, camped in the middle of nowhere, being eaten alive by black flies. The only way to survive was to use bacon grease and balsam gum.
Bacon grease and balsam gum? What did you do, eat it?
No, we smeared it on. It was really smelly stuff. And before we went out to work in the morning, we'd smear a thick layer of it onto our hands, faces, hair, anywhere a black fly could bite you. You see, the flies, they don't like the smell of balsam gum, and that keeps a lot of them from landing on you. The few thousands that get too close, they get stuck in the grease. They can't get through the grease to bite you, but they can't get out again either. So all day, your face is covered with this thick layer of black flies, all wriggling and squirming around. In the evening, we'd come back to the camp, and our faces would be black with the bugs. So we'd scrape them all off into a frying pan, along with the bacon grease, and have a snack of fried black fly on toast.
Yuck.
It was early in the spring when I decide to go for to work up in the woods in North Ontario. and the unemployment office said they'd send me through to the little Abitibi with the survey crew.
And the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario. Now the man, Black Toby, was the captain of the crew, and he said, I'm gonna tell you boys what we're gonna do. They wanna build a power dam, and we must find a way for to make the little ab flow around the other way.
And the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario. So we surveyed to the east and we surveyed to the west, and we couldn't make our minds up how to do it best. Little lab, what shall I do? For I'm all but going crazy with the survey crew.
And the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario. There was black fly everywhere, a crawling in your whiskers and a crawling in your hair, and a swimming in the soup and a swimming in the tea. Oh, the devil take the black fly and let me be. And the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario.
Oh, the bull cook's name was Blind River Joe. If it hadn't been for him, we'd have never pulled through. For he bound up our bruises and he kitted us for fun, and he lathered us with bacon grease and balsam gum.
And the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario. Black Toby fell to swearing cause the work went slow, and the state of our morale was a-getting pretty low. And the flies swarmed heavy, it was hard to catch your breath as you staggered up and down the treader talking to yourself.
And the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario. At last the job was over, Black Toby said, we're through with the little Abitibi and the survey crew.
'Twas a wonderful experience, and this I know, I'll never go again to North Ontario. With the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario. Oh, the black fly, the little black fly, always a black fly, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black fly picking my bones in North Ontario, I-O, in North Ontario.
Well, that was quite an adventure, eh? Getting stuck in a blizzard for 3 days?
Yeah, it was really neat. But I'd like to go back there in the summer, just to see the lake without any ice on it. Be great to sit there by the cabin and just soak up the sun with every inch of your body.
Every inch that isn't covered with black flies, that is.
Oh, yeah. The black flies. There's probably a lot of them up there in the summer.
So you better take along your bacon grease.
Yuck. Fried black flies. And mosquitoes getting into your eyes and your ears and your mouth.
Isn't nature wonderful?
Songs of the Land was written and produced in Vancouver by John Bartlett, Gary Marcuse, and Rika Rupsad. The actors were Al Cox and Klaus Werner. Singing by John Bartlett and Rika Rupsad, with banjo accompaniment by Bob Webb. The Wolf and Raven story is from A.L. Karras's Face the North Wind, published in Canada by Burns and McEachern. Technical production by Hal Beckett and Michael Dunn at Entmoot Studios. A special thanks to Stan Triggs and Flare Pistol Pete, Ted Ward. And thanks for listening.